This is a special Hanukkah edition of Judaism Unbound. Welcome back, everyone, and happy Hanukkah. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
So we're excited to be doing this special series of episodes that we're going to put out the day of each night of Hanukkah. If that's confusing, that means we're going to be putting out an episode on the day of the first night of Hanukkah, the day of the second night of Hanukkah, and we're not going to be putting out an episode on the eighth day of Hanukkah. The Jewish holidays are so insanely confusing that I think there's some possible alterations could be in order. But in any event, what we're excited to be doing is that we're hoping to put these series of episodes out there, really short little snippets that, if you want, you could listen to right before candlelighting by yourself with your family. You could listen to them on the car on the way home from work. But we're hoping to give you little ideas about ways to make the experience of Hanukkah a little bit richer.
These all come from our Hanukkah Unbound initiative that you can find online, and it's got all sorts of different resources for you to check out and help make your holiday experience better. But the most important thing is that we want you to enjoy the ideas that we put out there. But also, if your family does your own quirky, interesting, fun, meaningful, whatever adjective Hanukkah rituals, we hope that you will let us know. There's a link on our website to submit your traditions. And if you want to share them with the world, encourage others to use them. That's what we want to see. It's not just about our ideas. It's about elevating everybody's out there.
Yeah, so you can check out our ideas at www.judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah. That's H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H. We think of that as the American spelling of Hanukkah per our interview last year with Diane Ashton. But we are really eager to build that up for next year with all the ideas and all the experiences that you have. So like you just said, Lex, we're really hoping that listeners will send your ideas into us and we'll add those to the website for next year. Some of them are a little more serious than others. Some of them are just light, but Hanukkah is a combination of all of that. Realistically, looking at the American Jewish experience, Hanukkah is a major holiday. So let's see what it would be like if it were beefed up to have all the content of one.
On that note, I mean, you'll notice that this is not honed in on any particular night. We're releasing this big ol' episode with all of the eight nights so that if you want, you can take a little taste test and see which of these you want to apply to your own experience over the next few days. But over the next 8 days, we're going to be releasing each one of the little snippets separately so that you can have just, you know, a couple minutes easy access on your podcast's app for each night.
Just to clarify, you have two options. You can listen through to this episode and hear all eight of our ideas, or you can stop listening right now and wait till each night's episode comes into your podcast feed and you can listen to that short snippet as a surprise for you and your family. That's up to you. We're all about unboundedness and choice.
So thanks for listening, and please do send your traditions our way. You can hit us up at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com, and we also have a Submit Your Traditions page on our website that's easily accessible from our homepage. So with that, this has been the intro to Hanukkah Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we're here. It's the first night of Hanukkah coming up, and we're excited to offer you an idea that we developed last year of bringing a tradition from the holiday of Sukkot, which realistically most people don't observe. And that's actually something that's happened to a lot of Jewish holidays, where one piece from one holiday gets moved over to another holiday. And so we thought that it would be a really cool idea to bring this Ushbizin custom from Sukkot over to Hanukkah. And the idea of Ushbizin is that we welcome a different guest to our sukkah every night and think about that guest. And traditionally, those are biblical characters, and we could welcome biblical characters to our Hanukkah lighting, but we can also invite anybody else. So we have a bunch of different lists on our website. If you go to www.judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah and click on Welcome, you can see the various lists that Lex and I developed, but we're also excited about hopefully you're submitting your own lists, and we'll publish those on our site next year. So Lex, who are you thinking about inviting to your Hanukkah candle lighting this year?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So I'm welcoming to my humble abode tonight two important guests. The first one is Steve Buscemi. Why Steve Buscemi, Lex? He's not even Jewish. What's the deal? Well, Steve Buscemi, for those who aren't familiar, he's an actor. You probably recognize him from like Fargo and some other things. He was in this movie I saw recently called Norman, which is all about the New York Jewish experience, and it centers on this really fascinating character named Norman. And Steve Buscemi doesn't play the main character, but he plays a rabbi. And I thought he just did an incredibly brilliant job and just really captured some of the tensions at play in congregational life and even some of the issues that we've talked about in terms of funding congregations. And I just thought it was a special movie and that he really embodied some of the biggest strengths of it. So Steve Buscemi is guest number one. And then my second guest is a more traditional kind of guest from the Torah. I wanna call out to Dina, who is the sister of Joseph and of all that crew, sister of Reuben and Judah. And I mean, there's 12 of them, all those tribes. And she, unfortunately, doesn't get a tribe of her own, which is part of why I want to shout out to her. But also because I made this list last year of some ushpizot, some female guests from the Torah to welcome each night of Hanukkah, and I didn't think to include Dina, and I regret that on a number of levels, but in particular, in the culture that we're in right now, where we're finding out left and right about all sorts of people in Hollywood and in politics who have been committing terrible acts of sexual assault, Dina was raped in the Torah. And it's really a significant moment in Genesis, both because it's a rape of a core member of the family of Israelites that would become sort of the centerpiece of the rest of the books, but also because she doesn't really get spoken about in any other way. She is, you know, the sister who gets raped and then she's gone and she's never developed in any sense. And I think that that's a real problem and something that I would hope that the text atoned for at some point, but really hasn't, unfortunately. So I wanted to shout out to her this time around and think about how through these guests we can really connect lessons from our current time to ancient and contemporary kinds of guests.
You know, I this wasn't one of the ones that I was going to invite, and it does seem a little bit wrong right after Dina, but I'm going to go back to Steve Buscemi, and I'm going to welcome the Hebrew Hammer, because it's on my mind a lot since we had an interview with the star and director of the Hebrew Hammer recently. And, you know, I think that it's really kind of fun to imagine inviting a Jewish superhero every night, you know, to think about what are images of Jews that are fun. The second one that I was thinking about inviting is, I guess in another way, another Jewish superhero who is Albert Einstein, because, you know, I think it's really interesting. Someone like Albert Einstein feels to me like a Jewish role model, a really powerful Jewish role model, like more so than I think for me, a lot of biblical characters. You know, here's somebody that profoundly connected to being Jewish and it was important to him. And at the same time, obviously had a profound impact on the way that people understood how the world worked, not through miracles as we would think of them traditionally, right? Where some supernatural force creates the miracle. But I think that Einstein also had a notion of miracles that are kind of, you know, the awesomeness of nature. And so I feel like Einstein is really like an interesting character for me to be thinking about as we light these candles and imagine that people thought of them as a miracle in the supernatural sense, and that we can look at them and think about what they might be like as miracles in the natural sense.
Well, I love those, Dan. And it sounds like we have to do some sort of Skype meeting or Zoom meeting with the six of us, you, me, Albert, Steve, Dina, and Mordechai. That's the Hebrew Hammer's given name. I think we're going to have to schmooze. It should be a good convo. One other little thing before we go with this first night is that we hope that when you mention these ushpizin or ushpizot, that you talk a little bit about why you're welcoming, sort of like we did on this episode. We think that the tradition could be really rich if not only we mention, you know, X or Y person that we're welcoming into our lighting, but also if you say a little bit about why. So let us know how that goes. And we really hope that this effort, this tradition, this ritual feels meaningful for you. So thanks to all of you for listening. We hope that you'll send us your own traditions. You can do that at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com or via our Submit Your Traditions page on our judaismunbound.com website. So thanks so much for listening. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we're here just before candle lighting on the second night, and we are making various suggestions as to how folks can enrich their Hanukkah experience. These are meant as short episodes that you could just do right now. So what we want to talk about now is what we put together on our website, www.judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah. And if you click on the listen link, you can see some music playlists that we've put together. And there are links on the website where you can go directly to Spotify or directly to Apple Music and play those playlists right now. We put together two playlists for Hanukkah, and I just wanted to describe them very briefly. One is a kind of playlist of songs that more or less are actually Hanukkah songs. They were written to be Hanukkah songs, or they make reference to the Hanukkah story in some way, but they're not traditional Jewish Hanukkah songs. And we thought that it would just be cool to assemble all that in one place and kind of listen to that American Hanukkah experience and see what sort of that moves in you. The other playlist that we put together is a playlist where we actually put songs, a growing number of songs for each night, you know, just sort of almost like a different way to light the menorah. So instead of, or in addition to lighting the menorah and having two candles on the first night, the first night's candle and the shamash to light it with, you could play two songs. And we have a suggested list where what we tried to do in that list, it's really more just fun and cute, is that each night has a song that's about light or fire. That's the shamash. And then the rest are songs that incorporate a numerical word, the night of that night of Hanukkah, and then going down ultimately to one. It was an interesting challenge to have to find 8 songs with 1 in it and 7 songs with 2 in it. But we hope that you have fun with it. And actually, you know, it's what I found in putting together the list, Lex, is that you kind of realize that there's sort of interesting things that happen. Like, it actually becomes meaningful, you know, and I was surprised at how meaningful I actually find this almost like silly little list where we have songs going down from 8 to 1, but it actually gets me thinking about the holiday in a different way. So hopefully it's fun for people to listen to. And I might also be curious if it like sparks thoughts in other people about other ways that they could do stuff like that. Yeah, I keep doing those unintentional
all
things.
These fire and light analysis. Oh, they're everywhere, damn it. No, that's actually related to what I was going to say, which is that what this playlist helped me with is that all these songs that I think of just as, you know, fun little ditties on the radio, like I'm really bad at listening to songs and really internalizing the lyrics. I'm very musically oriented, and so I'm focusing on the melody and what's happening musically and less about what is actually being said. But what this helped me do is take, you know, a John Legend song that's, for example, that's called Darkness and Light, which I had never thought about in the actual context of Darkness and Light. I just thought about, you know, the nice harmonies and his beautiful voice. But it helped me think, oh, wow, there's like a lot of intention behind these lyrics and there's some beautiful things going on. So this was Dan's idea. I'm really glad that you brought this to the game plan and that we've been able to spread it out there for others to enjoy.
Yeah, and it's really cool to see some of the songs that really, you know, big artists have actually put out some Hanukkah songs. And it's not just your typical whatever. Many of them are either new songs or really interesting takes on those songs. So I think that there's a lot to discover on those lists. By the way, we're not actually playing the songs because we're afraid of copyright violations. So if you're a copyright lawyer out there and you could tell us what we are allowed to do, that'd be helpful.
Hi, Mom. She's a copyright lawyer. We can talk. Yeah. So on that note, we hope that you will let us know which songs you would add to this list. If you have ideas of songs related to winter or light or fire or any other Hanukkah themes that you think of that we failed to think of, let us know. And also just as our nightly encouragement, we'd love to hear your rituals, your activities, your ideas, whatever it is that you bring to make your Hanukkah experience a special one. Send them our way through our Submit Your Traditions page on our website or via email at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. So thanks so much for listening, and happy Hanukkah. This has been Night 2 of Hanukkah Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg. Tonight is Night 3, third night of Hanukkah, and we want to highlight what is maybe our most popular part of our Hanukkah Unbound website. It certainly got the most likes and shares on Facebook last year, and it's unsurprising. It's because it is our drinking track, encouraging you to make different cocktails for every night of Hanukkah. And we have to shout out to our friends at the Kiddush Club at Road Face Sedek, who are the brains and the execution behind behind all of these. We just posted on our website, but they came up with all these incredible punny names for drinks. And you can check out all of them. But my favorite one is actually the shamash, the helper candle that they identified. And they called that drink Elisha ben Abuya, spelled B-O-O-Y-A-H, as in Booyah. Some of you may recognize this character. He's a famous heretic in the Talmud. I think this is my favorite drink for a few reasons. One is that I have lately been on a big kick where I am like owning the idea of Jewish heresy and like telling people I'm a Jewish heretic and trying to get other people to be Jewish heretics like me. I think it would be great if we all had our own special heresies that we embraced and didn't pretend that we were all necessarily towing the same collective lines and following all the same rules. So all about heresy. Thank you, Elisha ben Abuya, for repping that. And also, I just read this amazing book, Hapardei Shel Akiva, which in English is The Orchard, which Dan actually translated into English. It's not out yet, but it will be out in a few months. And it was so good. And it was all about the time period that Elisha ben Abuya inhabits and about his friend, Rabbi Akiva. So shout out to Elisha ben Abuya. This drink has some ginger in it. It has some cranberry juice, which is a big fave of mine, some etrog vodka. It's a goodie.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk a little bit about another character that comes out of that book, The Orchard. Well, I mean, he doesn't come out of the book. He was actually a important figure in Jewish history. The rabbi's name was Elazar ben Arach, who's a very not well-known, one of the sort of original founders of Rabbinic Judaism, basically. And the drink in his honor is called the Elazar ben Arach, which is made from arach, which is an anise-flavored liqueur. The truth is, I really don't like anise or, you know, black licorice. or pineapple, which is also in it. But I do like to pay tribute to some of the forgotten figures of history. I wanted to say about the general idea of drinks that it's one of the ideas that we have on our website of sort of different ways to, quote, light the menorah. I think it may have originally come out of the idea of getting lit. And that, you know, you don't only have to light, you can get lit. And but, you know, I think there's all kinds of things that we were exploring with that. Could we have drinks that each of which is a different color? And, you know, I was thinking that a set of drinks would be cool that would have some of the seasons, you know, like pumpkin spice, you know, or things like that, that kind of come out of the season that we're in. And what would eight different drinks be like that seem like winter drinks?
And we would love to hear all of your ideas on the drink front. I feel like that's something that our listenership can get behind and would have some great brainstorming potential. So please send those our way at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. Make sure that you pour those drinks so that they overflow, because one thing Dan didn't mention about Elazar ben Arach is that he's analogized in the Talmud to an overflowing spring. Yes. So I guess we got to pour those drinks heavy. Help us out. Let's figure out the drinking aspect of Hanukkah, important mission of the Jewish present and future. With that, this has been Judaism Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Levinson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we are about to light candles for the fourth night of Hanukkah. And what we wanted to talk about tonight was the possibility of popular culture relating to Hanukkah, whether that's books, movies, or something else. And Lex, what's on your mind? Like, what would you go and do after you lit candles tonight in terms of popular culture?
Well, tonight and pretty much every night in the history of the universe, I would be excited to watch Rugrats Hanukkah, because Rugrats Hanukkah, I don't care what any of you listeners out there or anyone else thinks, is like the greatest episode of any television show in the history of the planet. And there's a few reasons for that. One is that Rugrats Hanukkah, as far as I know, was the first ever representation of a Jewish holiday in an animated kids in any kids show on TV. It was a huge milestone in the mid-90s. And it's also, forgetting just the landmark nature of it, a really beautiful story. And it manages to balance sort of an embrace of fun cultural traditions and things like latkes and those little pieces that we all love about Hanukkah with some of the narrative of the Maccabees and the story that led to this whole thing, and some just general ideas about family and connection and what it means to celebrate Hanukkah today. So that's all just the Hanukkah piece. And then it also builds in some really beautiful commentary on Hanukkah's relationship to broader society and its relationship to Christmas. There's people in the Pickles family, that's the Rugrats family, who are not Jewish, along with those who are. And so Christmas looms large in the episode as well. I think it's a really special, you know, half hour of television, and I'd recommend it especially for my fellow millennials and 90s kids who I'm sure have seen it 100 times, but you should make it 101. But also for those of you that might not have grown up with Rugrats, it's a great program.
It's funny, like, as I'm thinking about this, I'm kind of racking my brain for, like, what is really, you know, the best thing, the best piece that I like about Hanukkah. I mean, clearly there's the Hebrew hammer, which I'll bring up again, because that's a lot of fun and very Hanukkah related. I think I'm going in this sort of absurdist direction, because the only thing that keeps coming into my mind is the movie For Your Consideration, which is one of Christopher Guest's movies, you know, like, that's the maker of Spinal Tap, etc. And it has nothing to do with Hanukkah, but the funny thing is that it's a movie about the making of a movie, and the movie that they're making is called Home for Purim. And it's this idea that this Jewish family, everybody's coming home for Purim, which is obviously absurd because nobody comes home for Purim. It's not that kind of holiday, or at least it's not observed as that kind of holiday in America. And there's something about that kind of like absurdist element that I think is really interesting. You know, it's kind of like the bookend to Barry Levinson's movie Avalon, which is about a Jewish family apparently celebrating Thanksgiving. But in my read, it really is clearly about a Jewish family celebrating Passover. And, you know, there's a lot of that kind of, you know, hidden or absurdist, you know, on the other hand, kind of stuff in film. And I think, you know, it would be fun every night of Hanukkah to sort of watch a film that may or may not be about Hanukkah, but that in some way is kind of exploring Judaism in an unusual way. And I think that if we watched 8 of those in a week, you know, we'd have some really interesting conversations.
And we'd love to hear what you would add to this list of films to watch, books to read, whether they're directly about Hanukkah, there's lots of good stuff and a growing number of TV specials, etc., related to Hanukkah, or if there are other bits and pieces of film or books that you think relate to the holiday in one way or another. But send us your ideas. Explore the rest of our Hanukkah Unbound offerings at our website, judaismunbound.com. There's some great things that we hope that you'll enjoy and use to enhance your experience. So with that, this has been night 4 of Hanukkah Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg. And we are here on the 5th night of Hanukkah, and we are highlighting the Listen and Learn track of our Hanukkah Unbound website. There's, as a reminder, all sorts of different tracks online for you to check out at JudaismUnbound.com related to the holiday. The Listen and Learn track, for those who don't remember, is a set of our podcast episodes from about a year ago where we featured all sorts of guests talking about Hanukkah, its history, its contemporary observance, all sorts of good stuff. And we thought that we'd just sort of highlight a couple little teachings that each of us got from that experience. And I will start. I thought that our episode with Ruth Avish Magder was a really spectacular one. She came as actually a guest co-host. She wasn't one of our guests in the same way. She actually was sort of moderating with us as we spoke about Hanukkah in contemporary times. And she highlighted this incredible story in Billings, Montana in the early 90s. And basically what happened, and it resonates very much with the time that we are living in right now, is that there were a bunch of white supremacists sort of banding together in Billings, Montana, and making life terrible for people who lived there, Jews, but also African Americans and others who were minorities in that area. And apparently there was a young child, like 5 years old, who drew a picture of a menorah, and like their window was broken and all this terrible, nasty stuff. And he and his family sent something to the local newspaper letting folks know that this had happened. And the whole town sort of banded together to make sure that this wouldn't happen to anybody else. And a call was put out for everybody to put menorahs in their windows, not just Jews. And people responded. And it was a huge number of people that became part of that sort of micro movement in Billings, Montana. And before long, the white supremacists weren't really able to do very much in their town anymore, because there was such a strong community of people that had come together as a collective to work against that. I thought it was a really spectacular story that Ruth brought to us, and that we can revisit a year later.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. I'm reflecting back to a conversation that we were having with Burton Vysotsky, who wrote a book called Aphrodite and the Rabbis that talked about the kind of origins of rabbinic Judaism in Greek ideas, particularly Stoic thought. And, you know, I made a comment. He didn't really agree with me or didn't want to go as far as I was. But I still it's still on my mind, and I still think I'm right, that if the evidence shows that the early rabbinic Jews were actually quite comfortable with incorporating Greek ideas, Greek symbols, even Greek god symbols into Judaism and into their, you know, we talked about the mosaic floors of the synagogue that had symbols that were very much from Greek religion, you know, that it really makes me think a lot about this kind of allergy that we have had, particularly in America over the last 100 years, right, to things like Christmas trees. And, you know, that there's this really strong effort to sort of hold the line, which you can understand why that came about. And you can even understand why some people still think it's really important to hold that line. On the flip side, you know, I really think it's an inescapable conclusion to look at Jewish history and to see that it's just as much part of our tradition to incorporate elements from other groups as it is to resist that incorporation. So at the very least, you have to be able to say that the question should remain open as to, you know, how can Hanukkah change again now that Jews are living in these mixed families and all the other situations, all the other elements of why Jews, particularly in America today, are in a different situation from the past. So that's still on my mind, and it's still something that I think is really important for us to be thinking about, as many of our listeners, I think, are about to light candles with families that include people who are Jewish, people who are not Jewish, and people who have multiple identities.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we hope that y'all will reflect on those episodes too. They're still available. They're on our website. You can get to them at judaismunbound.com or just on our iTunes page. You can get to those Hanukkah episodes. They're, I believe, in the early 40s of our episodes. So definitely check those out. And in general, we hope that you will consider contributing whatever ideas and rituals and activities and et cetera that you and your family or your friends or loved ones do for the holiday. You can hit us up at dan@judaismunbound.com or Lex@judaismunbound.com if you have any of those. So thanks for listening. And with that, this has been Night 5 of Hanukkah Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rothberg.
And today we're going to be looking at the game of dreidel. It's thought by many to be a traditional Hanukkah game. In fact, well, I guess it is a traditional Hanukkah game. The question is, when did the tradition begin? A story that a lot of us learn in school is that the Maccabees and their friends were playing dreidel outside of caves in order to pretend that they weren't studying Torah, or they were studying Torah. And then when the Greeks would come, they would put away the Torahs and get out their dreidels and play along. But one of the things that we learned on the podcast and perhaps we knew before, was that the game of dreidel is actually based on a game that was played in Germany, which I think was based on a game that was played in Ireland. And it's quite clear.
A drinking game.
And
it's important.
Yeah, it's quite clear that the letters on the dreidel don't really in their origin stand for a great miracle happened here. They stand for the German words that mean, you know, take none, give all your money into the ante, you know, put half of your money into the ante, etc. And so I think that our conclusion from that is that just as we imported a game into Hanukkah and gave it Jewish meaning 100 years ago or whenever, we could do that again.
We can and we shall. And so Judaism Unbound has created its own dreidel game. We'll also shout out to our friends from Modern Tribe who have their Texas dreidel game. We're not going to play that one, but it's a Texas Hold'em variant on dreidel that they created a long time ago and which you should check out on their Modern Tribe website. But we created our own game last year, and it's actually like a dice-related game. So we've rebelled so thoroughly in a controversial sense such that we are not using the top modality, but instead are using dice. And so we made on our website under the play track of Hanukkah Unbound a bunch of like fun rules. It's actually analogous to the game Kings, which is another drinking game, which many of you may know. It's the one where you've got a big ring of playing cards. And when you pull a three, it means a certain thing. And if you pull a certain number, then people have to drink and all that stuff. You know it if you've played it, but we're making our own dreidel version. So without further ado, I'm going to roll some dice.
I think it's important for you to point out that we're using eight-sided dice. Yes. That's a key you know, that's why it's even better than dreidel, because the dreidel only has four sides.
Dreidel is the B minus version, and dreidel plus is the eight-sided dice version that we are pioneering, because eight sides for eight knights. We have solved dreidel. So, we are going to roll the dice. I'm going first. And I got a three. Three says, oh, that's a bummer. I have to put three pieces of candy in the middle. So Dan's going to go next, and he might win some of these. We'll see.
I got a six.
Six is truth or dare. So Dan, do you want to make me tell a truth or give me a dare?
I think given the podcast, it's going to be a little hard to get a dare. So how about a truth?
You could dare. You could be creative, but I'll do a truth. Sure. What do you want? What do you want me to tell the world?
What is your least favorite Jewish holiday?
Hitting me where it hurts. My least favorite Jewish holiday. I'm gonna be like really heretical, and I've said on the podcast a couple times that I sort of struggle with the high holidays, like Rosh Hashanah. I just like continue to not know what to do with other than Tashlich, the ritual where you throw your bread in the water in. Which represents sins, and the shofar, like those are okay. I like those, but like, I still haven't figured out Rosh Hashanah. I'm hoping that somebody out there will come up with the Rosh Hashanah tradition or ritual or service that takes it to the next level for me, but I'm not there yet. So I guess that's my truth. So now I will do one last roll. I got a four. Which means I get to take two pieces of candy from any opponent or from the middle.
Oh.
So Dan, I can't reach through Skype to you and take them from you. I'd like to take candy from you. It's not like taking candy from a baby, but it's like close. So I'm just going to take two candies back from the ones I just had to put in, and I am going to eat them for all of you out there to hear. No, I won't. I'm going to eat them, but I'm not going to do it right into the mic because that would be gross. But so anyway, that's our dreidel game. We hope that you will give it a shot and play it with your friends. You can find it on our website under the play track of Hanukkah Unbound. We hope that you'll send us any of your ideas for alternate dreidel games or general Hanukkah rituals, activities, whatever. And you can hit us up at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com if you have any of those ideas.
If you don't have an eight-sided die, I think you could just use two regular dice and ignore any numbers above eight.
Very true, although that will predispose you towards a lot of sevens and eights if you know some probability stuff. Hashtag nerd dues. So I am going to chomp one bite. Hope that was nice and loud. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
And we are here about to light the seventh candle of Hanukkah and wanted to think about other ways that we might light the candles. Earlier in the series, we talked about the idea of drinking a different drink every night and all kinds of other ways that you might supplement lighting the candles. But we've also wanted to think a little bit about, is there alternatives to actually lighting the menorah as we have it? And I wanted to bring up one of the ideas that we developed last year and that we have on our website at www.judaismunbound.com/Hanukkah. And if you click on the light tab, you can see our chemistry menorah.
You should say, let there be light when you click on it. It'll be more fun if you do it that way.
That would be great. You should definitely say, let there be light as you click. And I think that it'll be interesting to get your reaction to that chemistry menorah. It was based on a YouTube video that I saw about how to make your own glow sticks, which you probably shouldn't do at home. But I live near a university and have a friend who's a chemistry professor, so he was able to obtain the makings of this chemistry menorah. So we ordered a 8 test tube rack and follow this YouTube video and put in the various chemicals. And as you pour hydrogen peroxide into each one, it starts to glow. And this got me thinking about two dimensions. One is a recent article in the Forward by David Zvi Kalman, where he talked about the origins of the candle lighting, that something that I hadn't really thought about before, that 2,000 years ago, lighting a candle was actually a form of conspicuous consumption. It was actually quite expensive to light a candle, and certainly to light 8 candles, even if it was just in the really ancient tradition where you only lit one light per night. All the more so if you would light, you know, a growing number of lights every night. That would actually be a fair bit of a day laborer's salary. That was interesting because one of the reasons why I didn't pursue this chemistry menorah much further, I was thinking of, could we turn it into a kit? Could we sell it? Is that I think it would end up pretty expensive. But if you look at it that way, it actually wouldn't be so bad. Maybe that's part of it. So I'd encourage everybody to read this article. We've got a link to it in the notes for this episode. And curious what other ideas we might have that might actually get at the true intent of Hanukkah, which is that we really should put some skin in this game. One other thing that I really like about the chemistry menorah is just the miracle, you know, and right, to lighting a candle that you get out of a box doesn't really feel like a miracle, whereas pouring a clear liquid into a test tube and having it glow feels like a miracle, you know, and it's definitely something that if the ancient Israelites had experienced it back then, they would have absolutely been certain that it's a miracle. And so this harkens back to me for my idea from the first night of having Albert Einstein as the person I wanted to invite, you know, and just that idea that there are things that ancient people may have considered miracles that now we can explain, and there are things that we may consider miraculous today in a different way that are still worth experiencing in a miraculous form.
Yeah, I mean, definitely check out the different ways of lighting that we have on our site. I love a few of them. I mean, we talked about the drinks one. That's sort of a form of lighting. There's the glow stick menorah that you did can be done in the fancy way that you described, or it can be done just with sort of classic glow sticks if you want to hang them outside. And one that I really like paying homage to is the Shammai menorah, because in the Mishnah, there's a famous debate. We take for granted that, you know, Jewish rituals are the way Jewish rituals are or whatever. But actually, this core Jewish ritual, probably one of the most well-known Jewish rituals on the planet of lighting candles for Hanukkah, was a big debate at first, because the school of Hillel wanted to do, you know, what we do now, light one candle the first night and go up to 8. And the school of Shammai said that we should start with 8 and go down to 1. And there's some really interesting commentary about what the ideas were behind each of those. But I think that there's some good points on both sides. I think you could look at it either way. And so I am thinking about paying homage to Shammai on some of the nights by doing his number of candles, and would encourage folks out there to do the same. If you feel like sometimes we forget about those overlooked Jewish folks of the past who lost the arguments. So hope you check those out. Hope you will propose your own ways of lighting menorahs, your own menorah ideas. If you have like funky menorahs that you created yourself artistically, let us know. And any other Hanukkah ideas, because we want to hear from you. You can do so at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. And on our website, we have a Submit Your Traditions tab that you can access from our homepage. So thanks so much for listening. And this has been night seven already of Hanukkah Unbound.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dan Liebenson.
And I'm Lex Rofberg.
So we've reached the eighth night, Lex, and there's one topic that we really haven't covered yet, which is wrong for a Jewish holiday. You know, the whole idea of a Jewish holiday is they tried to kill us, they failed, and let's eat. And so let's talk a little bit about eating.
Let's talk about eating, and let's do some eating too. Yeah, I think that Hanukkah's culinary vibe is pretty wonderful, because a lot of people know in America that potato pancakes are associated with Hanukkah, and that's absolutely true. It's especially true for those of us who are Jews of East European ancestry. It's not necessarily always true for Jews who come from other backgrounds, but what is true, regardless of where in the world you are from, I just thought of where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, shout out to my millennials. Anyway, regardless of where you're from in the world, the key is not necessarily the potato part, as much as we might think it is, and as much as I might insist that my mother's latkes are the greatest on the planet, because they are. It's really about the fried food. That's what's sort of universal about this. And there are all sorts of examples of different cultures around the world that have fried different things in honor of Hanukkah. And you can find a bunch of them on our website. But just sort of without giving you the specific examples that others have already come up with, I'd encourage you out there to just fry something, like grab your frying pan. Hopefully, you know, just like in the story, you've got a little bit of oil left after these 8 days. You know, there's a little bit of a miracle in the air, and like however much oil you thought you were going to need for your dinners the last few days, like hopefully you still got some olive oil in the cabinet, maybe some peanut oil, and you can put it towards, you know, frying something wonky that you haven't tried before. And just as a shout out to the strangest fried food I've ever had, it's probably when I was at the Mississippi State Fair. Definitely among the best places to find fried food in the universe. And I had fried Kool-Aid. It basically was just like fried sugar. And it wasn't very good, if I'm being honest, but I'm still glad I did it and I would do it again.
I think that I had a fried Milky Way on a stick at the Minnesota State Fair one time, and I think it actually was pretty good. My wife didn't think so. She thinks it's too sugary, but I liked it.
Yeah, fried Oreos I've done. Those then probably a similar vibe. Those are good.
Yeah, I mean, so I totally agree with what you're saying. I mean, I think that it would be a very cool Hanukkah tradition just to like fry something different every night. You'd probably have a heart attack at the end of Hanukkah, but it would be worth it.
Heart attacks for the good of the Jews. Hanukkah 2017, 5778. Let's do it. That's not serious, but also fry some stuff because it's delicious and we have an excuse because our religion says it's an excuse. But we're going to close out this particular episode of the series, the last night of Hanukkah. And just even though we're closing out, we would love to hear what your various traditions are that you do with your family, with your friends, with your loved ones. This is a holiday that particularly lends itself to creativity. It's, you know, a short little ritual of lighting candles, a couple little blessings, and it's perfect for sprucing up in whatever ways you'd like to because it's so bite-sized and so easy. So I hope that people will do that. We'll send them our way at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com or through our website. There's the Submit Your Traditions tab that you can access from the homepage because we'd really love to hear. And then next year when Hanukkah rolls around, we'll have a big old Rolodex of creative rituals for people to try out that you will have shared with us. So thanks in advance for that. And with that, this has been Hanukkah Unbound.
So with that, we're going to bring this bunch of episodes to a close. We hope that you enjoyed it. We're trying to do a combination of something a little more practical than our usual Judaism Unbound episodes and obviously a little bit lighter in all ways of thinking about it, except the fried way. That's pretty heavy. But we're really interested in how this ends up affecting your Hanukkah. If you have ideas, as I said at the beginning, we're really looking forward to building up our Hanukkah Unbound website with all of your ideas for next year and for coming years. Because ultimately, we think that Hanukkah is becoming one of the major Jewish holidays, for sure, here in America, that it seems that the three holidays that people really observe in different ways, but observe, are Yom Kippur, Passover, and Hanukkah. And we really think it's interesting to think about what a beefed up Hanukkah would look like that would really accord with what we need it to be today. So help us design that. So please help us design that Hanukkah. Help us spread the light of that Hanukkah. And we're really looking forward to hearing from you after Hanukkah.
I think that that's a really good point. Hanukkah is a major holiday. Present tense, it is. We don't have to default to what were major holidays. I'm thinking of on How I Met Your Mother, whenever you say like major something, they always go major holiday, like you're saluting someone in the military. So it's a major holiday, whether it's from the military or not. And yeah, I mean, we could bemoan that. We could just sort of be sad that other holidays have become less prominent over the years. And in other parts of the year, Dan and I absolutely have discussed ways that we could sort of reinvigorate some of those. But we've got this holiday that, due to a variety of contextual reasons, is on people's radar, and we might as well make the best of it. We hope that you'll bring all of your creativity, all of your wisdom, all of your emotion to these experiences and help make Hanukkah really freaking great. So just to close out this big version of the Hanukkah Unbound episodes, as a reminder, all of these will be released in mini snippets for each night over the rest of the holiday. But we gave it to you at the beginning so that you can get a sneak preview and sort of map out how you're going to use it. We hope you've enjoyed all of them, and we hope that they prove meaningful for you. Please do send us your ideas. And we want to close out in the same way that we always do, by encouraging you to be in touch with us generally. And there's a few ways for you to do that. One is through our Facebook page, Judaism Unbound. A second is through our website, judaismunbound.com. And last but not least, you can always hit us up via email at dan@judaismunbound.com or lex@judaismunbound.com. Last but not least, we always like to suggest that you can make a monetary donation in support of us, either on a monthly recurring basis or just a one-time gift, and you can do either of those at judaismunbound.com/donate. We know December is a big time of year for those kinds of gifts, so we definitely appreciate whatever you are able to send our way. With that, this has been Hanukkah Unbound.